a big storm back east, and a big storm in the political system right now, both sides storming. So they're calling this the storm of 2016, and I don't know what that means, but since 2016 has just started, but there is a massive storm that's coming, and they're saying up to 2 feet of snow, and especially Baltimore and Washington, D.C. So we obviously have our eyes on that. I have a little clip for you from the Weather Channel on this development.
The night sky is offering us a treat.
Uh-oh. For some reason, they put a night sky ad in here. But hopefully next will be this thing on the blizzard. But they're talking on the night sky about the five planets that are lining up. So in any event, not too cold outside here. Didn't really need the heat last night too much. And, all right, so it looks like they've got their video screwed up on the Weather Channel, but let's hopefully, here we go. Ari Salazari, I think the guy's name is.
Look at all that delicious snow. Who used to eat snow as a kid? I know I did all the time, but it turns out it's not just the yellow snow that you shouldn't eat.
All right, so I'll get some clips here for you, but the forecast is for 2 feet of snow in D.C. And it is going to be really a bad blizzard, and it's going to bring not just snow but ice. And they're calling it a very dangerous blizzard. So we've had our share of weather events this year, haven't we? Or pardon me, last year into this year, with the flooding of various states. There was a repeated flooding of Texas, the flooding of California, and we had our own water events here. And you saw flooding from the Mississippi up, and wow. So now we're getting it back east. And of course, my buddy Pete was just telling me about these were tornadoes that were coming down in his area. So we're going to AccuWeather now. Oh no. All right. So, well, I'll find you a clip for that. AccuWeather, you have to have a flash drive, which we are, or a flash player, which we already have, of course. But the upshot is that the East is going to get pounded, and it's going to probably shut that area down for a few days. But 2 feet of snow is quite a bit, and they've got. I was watching some clips last night, and they had the showing how the basically the wind was coming in off the ocean directly into these affected areas, but could be one for the record books, according to CNN. Anyway, in other news, I do have a CNN clip here coming up here for you on the storm. And I'm trying to remember what the name of the storm is. 523-1450, by the way. 523-1450, 805-6180. We do have the text machine back in business here. They're calling it a nasty snowstorm that could surpass totals for the benchmark storm of 1922, between 12 inches, 1 foot, and 2 feet of snow to fall in the District of Columbia, Baltimore, and surrounding counties by late Saturday. These could be adjusted up or down depending. Blizzard conditions expected, and, you know, blizzard conditions includes quite a bit of wind, so heavy and blowing snow. And Virginia State Police said that after the light snow fell Wednesday, 163 accidents had occurred in the district or in the state, and 53 million people in the affected area here. Here we go.
1 million people in the bullseye of a potentially monstrous snowstorm. Cities up and down the East Coast have equipment on standby, ready for what could be the season's first massive dig out.
Insulation for prevent frozen pipes or shovel.
When you're dealing with a weather event of this magnitude, you really want to make sure that you have all the available resources that can be deployed.
In the nation's capital, people aren't taking any chances. Shovels and salt are selling fast.
We didn't own a snow shovel since we moved here, so we thought we better get one.
D.C.'s mayor is worried about potential power outages.
If this is a blizzard and we have sustained winds and people lose power and it's cold over a sustained period of time, that would be my biggest.
D.C. is forecasted to get some of the heaviest snowfall, about 2 feet. The area has equipped some 2,000 volunteers with shovels to clear walkways, and more than 800 people on snow teams to clear roads. The area's worst snowfall on record, 1922. But most recently, in February 2010, dubbed Snowmageddon, when nearly 2 feet of snow blanketed parts of the Northeast. The forecasted blizzard conditions, including high winds and low visibility, could have major impact on air travel across the East Coast. Boston down to Virginia. At some airports, airlines are already allowing passengers to change flight plans for free.
Well, that's nice. And so that's the big weather event here. Let me get you some headlines here. Powerful, fast, and furious rifle found in El Chapo cache. All right, so when they did the Fast and Furious sale of guns, which the FBI, I think the FBI was behind that, or the Department of Justice, they sold, if you can believe this, this is so how reckless this Fast and Furious was, they sold a rifle that was 50 caliber that they said they could quite easily bring down a helicopter, and El Chapo had that in his cache of guns. And that's why they did have it, is so that in case a helicopter came down after him. The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, is facing the wrath of the black community. There have been a lot of calls for him to resign. Because of the fact that he helped cover up the shooting of a young black male for quite a while, over a year, so that he could get reelected. It's very clear why he did it, and they gave the family, they gave the family $5 million without ever having a court case, which in and of itself might be really against the law. But anyway, he's struggling against demands for him to resign. Global stocks are sinking. Okay, I read an article to pass on to you guys about why is there global stock turmoil. We know why maybe there is stock turmoil in the United States or in China or whatever, and they're saying that what has happened is, and I think this is tied in to this massive over investment from these central banks trying to keep a lid on the economies, print their own money, you know, put money into their own stock markets, whatever, to make things stable. But we've reached the point, and especially this is true in China, where the currency is being kind of unbuckled. The China and places like China and Japan have long, well, Japan controls their markets in such a way that only Japanese companies can compete, and that has harmed them, and that is why that they have not had sustained growth for 30 years, 20 years, whatever. In China's case, they have artificially reduced it's kind of the same idea, but if from a different angle, they've artificially reduced the value of their currency. And so in doing that, they make it easier for foreign countries to buy their goods. But as pressure amounts, pressure of inflation or growth in the economy, there's a huge push to allow them the currency to float freely. And so what we're finding is across the world, there's a number of currencies that are doing that, and we're no longer able through these central banks to keep a lid on this stuff. And so we're going to see more ups and downs on the world market, which is going to affect the United States. And the United States is obviously the world's greatest economy in terms of market size and influence. Now, check this out. Oil is now cheaper than the barrel that the oil comes in, interestingly enough. And a gallon of milk is now worth 2 gallons of crude oil. Who would have thought that just a year ago? So what happened in that market was that the Saudi Arabians saw what we were doing with fracking, which was releasing an enormous amount of oil that was pent up in all of these rock structures, oil and gas in stratified rock, so that you'd have a layer of rock, then you'd have above it or below it gas and oil. There was no way to get it out because it wasn't pooling. It was trapped. So that the fracking, they put in these pipes. The pipes can expand, and so they expanded the pipes with water. Anyway, cracking the rock and allowing all of this oil and gas to come out. So we became, at least briefly, at least for a couple of years, the world's number one gas and oil producer. The Saudis saw that as an imminent threat to their empire and to the cartel. So they have been reducing increasing the amount of gasoline which has brought down the world price. Now, with Iran coming onto the world market, it looks like we're going to, for the foreseeable future, have oil surpluses. And because of that, oil could go down to $10 a barrel and the direction it's headed right now, which will bring a lot of chaos into world markets and cause a lot of misery for places like Texas and Mexico. And I've mentioned some of this to you. You're aware of it already. So that is part of what's going on there. Okay, we're going to come back, and I've got a couple of stories for you I think you'll like. So we'll be back to talk about those. 619, Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180 if you have a comment or even another topic. And this is from The Long Road Out of Eden by the Eagles. And this is, once again, Glenn Frey singing lead.
Staring at the falling rain, falling down like lonely teardrops, memories of loving days. These cloudy days, they make you wanna cry. It breaks your heart when the struggle begins and you don't know.
All right, so you've heard, and this is from January the 20th. So yesterday, Department of Defense announces New Mexico ID restrictions. U.S. Department of Defense says it will no longer accept New Mexico driver's licenses at its installations nationwide. And they announced Wednesday driver's licenses from New Mexico, along with those from Minnesota, Illinois, Missouri, and Washington State, can't be used as proof of ID for entering its bases. And you've already heard some of that, and you've heard that New Mexico licenses won't be accepted at airports. So the question is, what are they going to do in the session here? And Yeah, it's just another restriction for drivers throughout the land of enchantment is what they're calling it on KFOX. And Fort Bliss and White Sands Missile Range have already said they will not allow those with Mexico IDs on their facility. And DOD has said there can be special exemptions to these restrictions, such as medical emergencies. But, I mean, this is really frustrating. And I don't know. I don't see why they don't very quickly deal with this issue, because there is clearly no upside to it. 523-1450. If you have been, if you yourself have been, pardon me, multitasking here, if you yourself have been affected by this, let us know. But it's frustrating to hear about stuff like this that makes us look like we're not really with it, you know. Now, I've got another local story, and this happened at the court, two different courts. This is yesterday, two suspicious packages found Wednesday outside the Las Cruces District Court and the building that formerly housed the Doña Ana County Magistrate Court turned out to be hoax devices fabricated to resemble bombs. And they sent the bomb squad out there and discovered that they were hoaxes, and something built to look like a bomb, but was not. Around 9 a.m., package was found outside the district court, 201 Pacacho Avenue, on the side of the building facing Alameda, which is the back. The package was found by a security guard, and a portion of the courthouse near Alameda was evacuated as a precaution for the bomb squad. And Chief Judge, District Judge Fernando Mejia said he was notified shortly after the package was found, and then he met with Sheriff Captain Craig Buckingham, who's the head of the staff over there, who's been on the show even recently. And they made the decision to evacuate only a portion of the building. And Mejia said there isn't a major concern at 11 a.m. So they cleared the area and then discovered the hoax nature of it. And then they found a similar package like this outside the old magistrate court. And so we've had real bombs. We've now had fake bombs. And it kind of makes you wonder if there's a connection between there was a to the fake bombs especially not as. And all right, so let's my computer's acting up on me just a little bit here. Let's cover the course. Let's take a break. All right, so there is growing concern, and by the way, you do realize that before we switch into anything national, you do realize that we were named the fourth most dangerous state. I'm waiting for this stupid thing to reload. Report names New Mexico the fourth most dangerous state from 24/7 Wall Street. Only Tennessee, Nevada, and Alaska rank ahead of the land of enchantment. I've lived in three of the most four dangerous states. I'm amazed Florida's not in there. The rankings are based on the FBI's 2014 violent statistics, including sexual assault, murders, and assaults in general. And and New Mexico needs a PR agent. All right, so we've got a lot. We've got a lot of ground to make up from the oil prices. Two experts were brought into the legislative session and painted a grim scenario about oil and gas prices. Yesterday, they spoke to the Senate Finance Committee, who played a key role in putting the state budget together, Jeff Mitchell, director of the University of New Mexico Bureau of Business and Economics Research, and Dr. Jim Peach, professor at professor of economics at NMSU, outlined the problem and said there are a few solutions. Low oil prices are the problem, of course. And they say that the employment impact of low oil oil prices should wear off later this year. But that doesn't make any sense to me. But we've got a lot of oil, said Peach. There's no sign of higher demand. And then Mitchell said that there's the cost of oil can only fall so much. So what happens is, and oil prices, by the way, Wednesday closed below $27 a barrel. And I was saying that there was there's this kind of nightmare scenario where oil goes down to $10 a barrel, something like that. It goes so low that the only places that end up pumping oil are places that can pump it very, very cheaply, places like Saudi Arabia. Obviously it'll be pumped here in the United States, but Saudi Arabia and Iraq have very low costs on pumping oil because the oil is close to the surface. It's easy to get to. So they're claiming 2017 is the year that we would start to get jobs back lost from oil. So a little bit depressing. And, you know, what else can you say? I mean, we're very dependent on oil. That's why it's a disaster if we don't develop more industries in this state. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, there's stuff in this town that I've been kind of thinking about could be developed. There was only a little bit of leadership on it. All right, so let me take another reload and talk about the election. 635 Kelly O'Connell AM, 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180. All right, so there is a couple of big stories out there in these national races, one of which is that the Hillary Clinton campaign has lost energy, it has lost focus, and has been badly damaged by the renewed accusations against Bill Clinton and the fact that you've got the surge of the Sanders, the General Sanders situation. So, and there's a lot of concern in the Democratic Party that basically what happened was that they did not plan for the future. Their future was Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is the ship that they set sail on. And all there is to that story is basically that if Clinton doesn't make it, then there's no plan B, because Sanders is so radical in his socialism that there would be no way to bring in a new candidate. Now, Trump himself has said that if Hillary gets indicted in all of these investigations, that then she would be replaced by Biden, that the convention would just replace her with Biden. Now, whether that's true, I don't know, but it's kind of an interesting scenario. Now, here is a little bit from Morning Joe saying that the Democrats only have themselves to blame for being in this position.
Bernie needs to drop out too.
Yeah, you know what? It's good that everybody ignored him so much and thought that he was just this crazy socialist that would go away. You know, it was really smart of the Clinton campaign, actually. And
all right,
DNC,
with less than 2 weeks
DNC
remaining before the
trying
Iowa
to control
caucus.
The election by making less debates. Good on you.
A new Monmouth Heard University yourself. Poll of Democrats nationwide show Bernie Sanders now trailing Hillary Clinton by 15 points. She led by 33 points a month ago.
Debbie.
But that comes as a new WMUR CNN poll out of New Hampshire shows Bernie Sanders opening up a shocking, commanding 27-point lead over Clinton. He led by 10 points in this poll back in December. Clinton led by 8 points. Just in June.
Thank God you controlled that debate thing, because that really helped out.
The Vermont senator is viewed favorably by 91% of New Hampshire Democrats polled, while Clinton is viewed favorably by 65%. Let's look at some more trends. Since last year, Senator Sanders' net favorable rating in New Hampshire has steadily improved, while Secretary Clinton's has eroded over the same period of
time.
It
all comes as Senator Sanders continues to criticize Clinton's record out on the trail. Here he is talking about Wall Street and the war in Iraq yesterday.
I think on the crucial foreign policy issue of our time, it turns out that Secretary Clinton, with all of her experience, was wrong, and I was right. Experience is important. Dick Cheney had a lot of experience. A whole lot of people have experience, but do not necessarily have the right judgment.
Goldman Sachs is part of the revolving door politics of Washington. Over the last several decades, Goldman Sachs, a corrupt major financial institution, had two Secretary of State, a Secretary of the Treasury. This same financial institution provides huge amounts of money in campaign contributions and in speaking fees.
All right, so that's the direction that Sanders is going in, and there's a lot more of that. Now, Hillary Clinton is in a tailspin. Some people will suggest to you that she's not just in a tailspin, but that she is fatally damaged. Fatally damaged and unable to right the ship, that she is basically was flying very high. She's like Icarus. I don't know if she flew too high to the sun, but she certainly got her wings scorched. And, you know, Hillary Clinton is involved in a war right now. And part of the war is to try to be elected to the United States presidency. Another front on this, though, is Benghazi. Another one is emails. You know, she's just got all these things going on, and it is kind of too bad for the Democratic Party that they put all their faith in her, while at the same time she had all these problems that were not addressed, and maybe they didn't feel like they did have a plan B. And plan B in this case perhaps would not have saved her anyway. I don't know. Wouldn't have saved her, but I don't know. I mean, for the Democratic Party to put all their eggs in this basket was very, very unwise. And let's take a little break here. And we'll be back, and I've got some another clip for you to think about. But there has been some criticism of the Palin speech that has been, it's been called crazy performance art, whatever. And her son, I think, was just arrested, and Donald Trump said he had asked her to mention that. So Sarah Palin, I don't know where she's at mentally. I've been defended her many times in the past, but I just wonder if what she's been through put too much pressure on her, and maybe she cracked up a little bit. Who knows? either maybe, or she, maybe she's just winging it. Maybe she doesn't want to sit down and write a speech. Maybe she just wants to talk off the top of her head. She is kind of an interesting, charismatic person. So 644 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text.
I can see that you've been hurt. Maybe I've been lonely. I've been out here lost and searching, looking for a
It is 6:47 now. Here's a little bit more from a Palin speech about Trump. I don't know. I've got this friend, Pete. I've mentioned to him to you many times. He and I have had horrific battles and in the past over Obama and stuff. And he was kept texting me how crazy Palin's speech was and how he wants to know if she had a mental breakdown or whatever. I didn't even listen to the whole speech. But there have been various commentators that have said stuff about it, that it was like performance art, that it was like a slam poetry. And I heard her say one thing, drill, baby, drill, down into this topic or whatever. I think she's just kind of riffing off of some of the past high points of her speeches. I don't personally think she's gone crazy, but anyway, here's a little bit from her speech, and then I'll have a GOP strategist who's criticizing her. But don't forget that GOP is going to go against her because she's supporting Trump.
America in the war zone. But my son, like so many others, they come back a bit different. They come back hardened. They come back wondering if there is that respect for what it is that their fellow soldiers and airmen and every other of the military so sacrificially have given to this country. And that starts from that. The top is the shame that our military personnel even have to wonder if they have to question if they're respected anymore. It starts from the top. The question, though, that comes from our own president, where they have to look at him and wonder, do you know what we go through? Do you know what we're trying to do to secure America and to secure the freedoms that have been bequeathed us? So when my own son is going through what he goes through coming back, I can certainly relate with other families who kind of feel these ramifications of some PTSD and some of the woundedness that our soldiers do return with. And it makes me realize more than ever, it is now or never, for the sake of America's finest, that we have that commander-in-chief who will respect them and honor them. In fact, not 10 minutes ago, I was handed a military coin from one of your great residents here, a young man who is retiring from the military, and on the coin it says, we're a brotherhood that only a few can understand. I know that you understand. So Oklahoma, we need you to send. You need to share the message with the rest of America. And when you go to vote in your primary March 1st, you can make it a Super Tuesday for the rest of America by leading the way with the vote for the next commander who will respect our troops, who will give them what they are deserving, and who will treat our vets better than illegal immigrants in America.
Well, she's reading off something right there. So not reading it, but she's kind of got notes. So maybe she wasn't using notes the other day. She didn't sound crazy to me there. Here's somebody, though, who was making a statement about this speech that she made. And I think it's obviously a win for Trump to be supported by her because she's grassroots. She's seen as an evangelical person. And on the alternative, you know, it doesn't, obviously it hurts Cruz. It would hurt anybody else in the race that is not supported by her. And I'm sure Cruz was stung by that. All right, here is a little bit of criticism of her speech or her original speech related to giving Trump her approval.
The problem for Donald Trump is Sarah Palin going rogue and saying crazy things, which she did yesterday. I don't know. It was like performance art. It wasn't really even a political speech. Sarah Palin is not going to be this big asset for her, especially after Iowa. She's going to be a huge liability, and she'd be hung around.
What she said you heard yesterday that was
I don't know. It was all kinds of. It was like a bunch of poetry. I don't know what it was. It was just, it was non-connected. Didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And she's not that great of a surrogate, and I think it's going to be a problem. She dragged McCain down.
Is there a cabinet post you would trust her in?
No, God, no.
Not Andy, nothing.
Nothing. No.
Nothing.
God, no.
Nothing.
No.
Not transportation, nothing.
Nothing. Bigger problem.
All right. I disagree with that. I mean, she could be put in a post. But the thing is right, basically, she didn't drag McCain down. It was only after McCain brought her on that she and McCain went up 5 points above Obama, and there was total panic. And then there was this disastrous meeting over the financial crisis that McCain went to. And the real story on that is what happened is, and this is what makes an explanation of this meeting is, kind of explains how dangerous the people are that are in charge right now. They went into this meeting. Only one person had notes for what was going to happen in the meeting besides the chairman or whatever. Somebody from Goldman Sachs got the crib notes from what was going to happen. And I guess from Paulson, and Paulson must have given them to this person. That person brought them to Obama. So only Obama sitting in this group of senators knew what was going to happen in this speech. And so what he did is he purposefully, in the middle of this financial crisis, this huge financial crisis, went after McCain and made him look like a complete fool in this meeting and really embarrassed him. And when the news of that got out, that really helped tank the McCain. And McCain had kind of been overly emotional during this meeting, and it really kind of tried to give some leadership. And instead of working on the problem, Obama's only goal was to make him look like a fool, which ultimately helped hand the presidency to him. So it's the kind of people that we're working with, and that's why I take seriously anybody who has a criticism of this president as not being for America, not being interested in America's most important goals or historic goals. There's something wrong with Obama, and a lot of people who have left tendencies have told me off the record that they don't trust him. Some of them have told me that he's a Muslim. I mean, I don't have any knowledge that he's a Muslim, but that claim has been out there a lot. But that There have been plenty of Democrats that I've talked to that have trashed him or have, you know, said that he doesn't really stand for America. You have to really be, I think, blindly support the party to look at this Obama and say he's a wonderful president. He cares about America. He wants to do the right thing. There's something wrong with his ideas. And like I told you before, I think that he has this kind of socialist vision of the future. And that's why he supports things like porous borders and making deals with Iran and the Muslim Spring and supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. It's crazy that someone in office in America would support the Muslim Brotherhood taking over Egypt. That's one of the craziest things that I've ever heard. And yet nobody in the media, other than maybe Fox News, even really reacted to it. But that is, I mean, if the Muslim Brotherhood became the controlling force in Egypt, we would have a giant, another giant problem on our hands. And so would the Middle East. So anyway, to sum this first hour up, Hillary Clinton's got a lot of problems, folks, and I don't see, personally, I don't see her getting out of her problems in time for the election, so that'll leave a cloud over her head. In addition to that, she's got another problem, is they didn't take Bernie Sanders seriously. Now, what's the problem with Sanders? Because you're going to say Bernie Sanders is a socialist, he's a transparent, he's an open socialist, he's probably a Marxist. And there's no way that he could ever make it as the leader of that party. And that's not true. What he talks about is a hearth. It's heart and soul issues for the left, the attack against crony capitalism, the opposition to big banks, the idea that international corporations are running America. Campaign finance needs to be reformed. All of these issues that he focuses on are issues that the average Democrat, if you talk to them, will say, I totally agree with Bernie Sanders on this. I totally agree with him on this and that. And I think that's a very dangerous situation for Clinton to be in, because she's personally unpopular. And she's, there have been books written about this. Unlikable is the name of one by Edward Klein, and a lot of ink has been spilled over this. The more you're around Hillary Clinton, the less you trust her, the less that you like her, and she's getting more and more exposed. They tried to, you know, kind of wall her off by keeping the number of debates less and putting them on. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they put on a debate during the Super Bowl. They don't want her seen. Well, it's backfired on her. Bill Clinton has been once again exposed as a predator against women. It's hurt Hillary because she's been dragged into this too again, and she's going down. I wouldn't be surprised if Bernie Sanders won the whole thing. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE with Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. 523-1450 and 805-6180. To text, and I really appreciate you spending some time with me this morning, and we're going to dig into a little Trump and some other stories on the next hour. We'll be back after the break.
Baby, I would never make you cry. I would never make you cry. I would never let you down. I would never be untrue. I know where we can go.
Well, good morning, 7:06. If you're just tuning in, it's the 21st of January, of course, and you've got outside right now. It wasn't too cold last night. High today is supposed to be 54, 24 is the low, and right now it's 32, so maybe it'd be a little bit colder tonight than it was last night. But anyway, we had received a call yesterday, if you were tuning in, and in the first hour, we talked a little bit of local news and the fact that the Department of Defense is not going to allow New Mexico driver's licenses to be a pass at any facilities. Which is a little frustrating, and also the fact that we're number four most dangerous state and the massive impact of the collapse of oil revenue, part of it. And then we talked a little bit about Hillary Clinton and her race right now and Sanders coming to overtake her, possibly. We got a phone call yesterday by Richard, who had talked about Satanism, I think, trying to remember the exact term, that they were practicing Satanism at the local Catholic church or whatever. And so I wanted to mention to you that I'd gotten this book. It was a very, very interesting book, and I haven't read the whole thing, but the book is by Paul Kleber Monod, Solomon's Secret Arts, The Occult and the Age of Enlightenment, and the Age of Enlightenment is 17th, 18th century. The Enlightenment is to bring in, was the attempt to bring in the rationality, science, and logic into society. And I would say up to this point it had a limited impact, but it was actually massively influential. But anyway, I wanted to mention just one thing from this book, and in talking about devil worship or Satanism or whatever, I would categorize that as being part of the occult. And all right, so there are people that today are practicing Druidism, so they claim. The Druids were the law keepers and the religious figures from the Celts. And I actually just through sheer coincidence happened to have done my thesis for I have a master's degree, and my thesis was related to that. I did my thesis on ancient Irish law, what's called Brehon law. But the carriers of this tradition were the Druids. The Druids went from being these priests, these, you know, pagan priests, into basically transitioned into becoming the lawyers, which you may not find a coincidence whatsoever. But in any event, I was getting into this book, and I thought it was pretty interesting that they said in here. Let me just read from you a little bit from this book, and it's very well written. And then I'll make some commentary on that as to the claims of Satanism and everything. It seems doubtful that much in the commercialized occultism of today can be traced back beyond the late 19th century. Examined closely, the promotional activities of contemporary psychics and astrologers do not bear much resemblance to the ritual practices of Egyptian or Babylonian priests. Even the foundations of serious occult thinking owe more to modern anxieties and to modern marketing techniques than to the builders of the pyramids or ziggurats. A ziggurat is basically a pyramid that is not capped off on the sides. But anyway, to borrow the terminology of Eric Hobsbawm, the occult as we know it today seems largely to be an invented tradition. Its direct evocation of the past, its venerable heritage and alleged roots in the wisdom of the ages have as often has not been misappropriated, distorted, embellished, or even fabricated, whether out of enthusiasm, ignorance, or just plain chicanery. So my point from this brief little passage is that when you call something Satanism, that's kind of a specific claim, but when you claim that people are devil worshipers, I just wanted to point out that there was this Church of Satan, and that the person who wrote the Satanic Bible and everything, that was a new phenomenon. I'm not saying that people didn't worship the devil in ancient times, but what they did do is disconnected. And Richard was claiming, and this is my application here. Richard is claiming that some church some Catholic church was practicing Satanism. I think you gotta kind of separate the chaff from the wheat here. And by the way, the Satanic Bible was written by Anton LaVey, and he was the head of the Church of Satan, and then he died and everything. But the point being that the point of this whole thing being that there is no kind of continuation of ancient Satanism, and the Satanic Bible would just be somebody's modern interpretation. Now, do I think somebody could worship Satan? I guess the answer to that would be, yeah, I think they could. I mean, you could kind of, if you want to be technical, about it. The Satan is a character in the Bible, the devil Satan. And if you put in the time to study it, there is a lot in there that would lead directly or indirectly to be able to put together a satanic theology, if you want. And there is you could build a Satanism, and you could also just, instead of doing that, just kind of worship the forces, I think what a lot of people are doing who are involved in this stuff is to worship nature, is to try to go back and replicate ancient paganism, which you can't do. My point here is you can't really do it, because we don't know exactly what they believe, because they were mystics, and mystics do not write down what they believe, what they practice. So we don't, for example, know what the Druids believe. Now, we can probably approximate it to a certain extent in the holy days and their rituals and stuff, but we will never know exactly what they believed. And so this modern attempt to return to nature and this kind of criticism of Christianity and attack on the modern world, and that's paganism, and then throw in kind of a dark element, which I've never really understood Satanism, because what's the old saying by the Hertz rental car company? We try harder, we're number two. I mean, why would you decide, make an intellectual decision to worship the loser of a Titanic? I mean, that would be like following Nazism. You know, Nazism lost in World War II. Why would you follow it? So, in any event, to the extent that anybody in the Valley is worshiping Satan, there could be a number of Satan worshipers out there, but they're not doing anything out of the ancient past. It's a modern replication. Now, having said that, I think it's stupid if you believe Satan is the character created by God, who is kind of God's foil, who brings all evil into the universe, to worship that person would be idiotic, right? So I would think most of the people who are doing it are really trying to worship the earth and the seasons. And in a sense, it's kind of an anti-religion. It's anti-Christian to the extent that they reject God. They reject the Bible, Jesus, and everything. So I did think Richard's comments were kind of foolish, though, because he said he's never studied Satanism. He wouldn't waste his time. But they're practicing Satanism down at the local Catholic church. But anyway, I wanted to mention that a little bit. I thought you might find it. The board is not exactly lighting up, so I don't know if anybody finds this kind of a yawner. But having said all of that, having lived now in Miami and now here, I do understand that there is some level of Santeria or voodoo that is practiced here, some Mexican version of it, and you think of the Day of the Dead and stuff. And in Miami especially, I used to find dead animals that were like wrapped up, that were sacrificed. And there is Santeria, there is voodoo. Santeria is Cuban, voodoo is Haitian, but it is a combination of the religion of the Indians, or the basically black people taken from the Nigeria's Yoruba River, and those people were enslaved. They were turned into slaves, brought over to America, England, whatever. And so they accepted. Basically, it is and brought to some obviously brought to Haiti and to Cuba and other places like that, and then some of those people came over here. But it's Catholicism on the surface, but underneath it is like Satanism or whatever, or it is really is this Indian religion out of the Central Africa. This is Kelly. I've got another call. Let me put you on hold. I'll be right back. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. It's Bev.
Hey, Bev. Go ahead.
Well, I'll take a gander at what you're talking about. The obvious practicing of paganism and stuff isn't really that popular because it's not socially acceptable. But what is more dangerous is those subtle things that pretend to be light, angels of light.
Such as?
Well, New Age and all of the different types of meditation that's going on. Very popular here right in the community.
Yeah, and I accept that. I mean, you've got either Christianity and Judaism as this backdrop, or you have a lot of Eastern religions and then stuff out of Africa. You know, a lot of paganism is rooted in Africa. But go ahead.
Yeah, and it's more in the dirt, kind of, you know, dust and ashes kind of paganism.
Mm-hmm.
But New Age came out of Hinduism, and it's pretty ancient, and it's just, to me, a new name. It was very popular pre-German, pre-Nazis. Madame Blavatsky.
Blavatsky started into Theosophy, and she started the Golden Dawn, the Society of the Golden Dawn.
Yeah.
So
it's just kind of from the Age of Aquarius and all of that now.
I wanted to challenge the idea that there was this ancient paganism that had been kind of like resurrected whole cloth and brought into the modern era. But I mean, I do agree. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
You know who I am, and you and Bev are mine for putting me on hold.
All right, so let's take a break here. And all right, so I don't mean to suggest there's not Satanism, but Satanism, I mean, you'd have to go into this modern Satan Bible, but it's not the same Satanism of the ancient world. But anyway, I don't want to sound like I'm contradicting myself. There is a lot that we know about ancient religion. I've got a large number of books on Roman religion, ancient Roman religion that are very interesting. So anyway, I'll make a few comments when I come back on that, and then we'll jump into Trump. Well, I got a little bit on Hillary too. 720 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-6180.
There's no more stormy nights, no more cloudy days. Thank you.
So just to explain something, I guess it's one of those things that I got into a little bit of research on this stuff and was kind of found it fascinating. And when I first started looking for books on it, I didn't know how much they knew about ancient Rome, for example. But there's a difference in the religion there. There's a difference. And don't forget, okay, so the Romans had this doctrine they called Pax Deorum. Everybody's heard of Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. But Pax Deorum is a very interesting idea. The Romans were, in their mind, the most intoxicated by religion, the most religious people in the world, and found themselves to be very pious. You know, it's paganism, but they were very devoted to it. And I could give you a lot of different examples of that. But this Pax Deorum was the peace of the gods. Now, it has been claimed, although I haven't been able to find a lot written on this, it has been claimed that the peace of the gods was the number one public policy of the Romans. Now, why would this be? It was because they considered keeping peace with the gods the number one reason behind their success. And to be at war with the gods or to be at odds with the gods was a terrible thing. And so they didn't have the idea of revelation. The idea of revelation that we understand, where God gives his words to humankind, that comes through the Judeo-Christian and later the Muslim. And then you can throw others in there too, Mormon, et cetera. But this idea that God is up in heaven, he's out there somewhere, and he's giving his words to human beings through prophets, and that they're writing them down, and these words are you know, they're dispositive, they're the end all be all. That's very much a Western idea. It's a biblical idea. Now, the notion that you had to follow, kind of track nature to find out what the gods wanted, what your status was, that's more of an Eastern idea. As Bevan mentioned, the Romans had these augurs, people that would track the flight of birds, the landing and the feeding and the flight patterns of birds. It's augury. And they also had experts in what is called extispicy, which is the study of entrails, livers, and stuff like that. And so that's how they found out what the future held. They didn't have a word from God. And the idea that the gods would have a word for them in the way that the Christians and the Jews believed would have been incomprehensible to them. So, but they were very religious. And so, you know, we can study their religion and understand what they believe. Now, there's other ancients that were mystics, and so the Druids were one of these. And there's a priestly, what they call a priestly caste in every ancient society. And then from the priest or class comes both the law and the religion. Those are put together. So anyway, I'm going to get beyond everything, but this idea of, say, somebody coming along, I just wanted to mention to you, this is a very roundabout way, hopefully an interesting way, but a roundabout way of communicating that a person says somebody else is doing Satanism. Yes, there is a Bible, a satanic Bible, but it is a modern creation. It is not a replication of what the ancient people did. Now, there was this god called Baal, and that is frequently found. It's a universal god throughout the ancient world, but is not a god like Yahweh in the Bible, a god in a pantheon. They always had these pantheons. There was a group or a family of gods. But Baal was when they sacrificed babies, in the Philistines and the Corinth, the group of people that the Romans fought against. I'm trying to remember their name. They had these great Punic Wars, the Punic Empire, and Carthaginians, they killed babies. And this Philistines had this enormous iron bull that they would create a fire underneath. It was a cast bowl. It was hollow inside, and they would take babies and drop the babies in the mouth of this bowl. And so the bowl would be so hot that babies would basically just fry to death, or they'd evaporate or whatever. Anyway, that's ancient paganism. And ancient paganism was based on fear. It was based on a lack of revelation. It was based on fear. And that's why they say that this transition from the ancient world into Judaism and Christianity was so powerful, because it was a description of how to have a positive relationship with God instead of one based on fear and superstition. It was it was based on revelation, an actual statement of God, from God about himself. So if you want to understand the transition between the ancient world and the modern world, that's one of the best ways. All right, I've got a song here from Glenn Frey. We're going to come back and talk about a little bit about Hillary's problems and then a little bit about Donald Trump. Glenn Frey, Part of Me, Part of You, from the movie, I'm trying to remember that, then the two women that go around killing people that steal a car and everything, Thelma and Louise. This song always reminded me of an Eagles song. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 and 805-6180. All right, so we've got here here's a couple of things on the latest from the emails on Hillary Clinton.
Let's bring in our panel from Washington, Tucker Carlson, host of Fox and Friends Weekend, Mara Liasson, national political correspondent of National Public Radio, and syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. Tucker, let's start with the emails and this Democratic race.
This is it. This is the smoking gun. Keep in mind, this memo was produced not by a conservative news outlet, but by a professional investigator who works for the Obama executive branch, and it shows conclusively that dozens of the very most secret possible data points in possession of the U.S. government wound up on an unsecured server, which, by the way, the U.S. intelligence community believes was penetrated by foreign intelligence services. I spoke to someone right before the show who's been covering this who said if this were a member of the uniformed military who'd done this or a CIA operations officer, they'd be in jail right now. It's impossible to talk our way out of this. I think this is a pivot point in the Democratic race.
A pivot point, okay. But we've heard a lot of that before. Here's a little bit more from Shannon Coffin on Hillary Clinton's demonstrated gross negligence over email server.
And as a former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department's Civil Division and former counsel to Vice President Dick Cheney. Shannon, good to see you. So apparently, unbeknownst to many people, there's a level of top secret that's even above top secret. And she had that stuff on her private server. And now Catherine Herridge was reporting tonight this could be a game changer in this entire email situation for her. Explain it.
This is what we call code word information. It's information that is compartmentalized so that even if you have a top secret clearance, that doesn't mean you necessarily have access to this information. These are programs that protect, that are classified at this high level to protect sources and methods of intelligence. And the disclosure of this information could be extraordinarily harmful to the United States security interest.
This is the kind of stuff that General David Petraeus got in trouble for and wound up getting charged with a felony for, but pleaded down to a misdemeanor, right?
Well, that's right.
With felony charges. That's
right. But remember here, this is pervasive. I mean, we're talking about dozens of emails that the Inspector General of the intelligence community has told Congress that he has viewed. And that information is so secure that he had to get special permission for his staff to be able to review information about those emails. And all of this is on her private server. We're talking about at this point, we know of over 1,300 emails that are classified at some level.
Contrast that information, which we're now hearing from actual government sources who are investigating this.
Right.
Contrast that information with what she has said. Here's one sampling, but she said it over and over on other dates. Watch.
Well, first let me say that I am confident. I never sent nor received any information that was classified at the time it was sent and received. I did not send nor receive anything that was classified at the time. I did not receive nor send anything that was classified.
What is she trying to say? I mean, like, is there any out clause for her? Because what we're hearing now is, yes, you did.
And that story's changed. It went from there was nothing classified to, hey, there was nothing marked classified. And really, Megan, that's not a defense. It's an admission of guilt. This is information that had to be taken off of a classified server or a classified document and put knowingly by someone into unclassified.
So what she's really saying there is the document wasn't marked classified, but that's not what determines whether a document is classified or not.
No, and that's right. And remember, we go back to the statutes that define criminality here. Those don't even mention classification. The statute that is at issue here makes it a crime to under terms of gross negligence, not even knowledge, but grossly negligently removing national defense information from a secure location and putting it in an unsecure location.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think Hillary's in a lot of trouble on this, but who knows? I mean, you get to a certain level of power and place in the government that you're almost untouchable. I mean, you know, if Barack Obama is driving down the road for whatever reason, was driving himself somewhere and was speeding or turned without putting on a blinker, they're not going to give him a ticket, right? So, I mean, Hillary has been at the highest rungs of power. It would take a lot to indict her, wouldn't it? 740 Kelly O'Connell, 1450 KOBE AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. 805-6180 to text, and I've got some text to read you when we come back, and we'll get into a little Trump. All right. So what is the promise? What is the dream of the Trump supporters? The dream of the Trump supporters is that he will come into the White House and treat their beliefs as being worth defending, as being sacred. So I think that it is the hope is that he will do to the people that have tormented the conservatives, the moderate GOP members, the libertarians, whatever group you want to point to that are supporting Trump, and the 20 or 30% that we know from the Democratic Party that plan to support him. They want to push back. They want to fight back. And is it unrealistic? I mean, the way that I'm reading how Trump is developing on the stump is he's really picked up an enthusiasm, and he's been enormously rewarded for his bellicose nature, for his willingness and even enjoyment of counterpunching. It's been a remarkable thing to watch. And so that's what they're hoping. Now, is that worse than voting in someone who claims to be conservative and then it just, you know, makes a mess out of everything like George W.? I respect George W., but with all due respect, if not for Iraq, the world would be a much different place right now. Here we go. Morning, Joe.
Yesterday, Donald Trump spoke at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, where he softened his tone, though still mixing in a few mild swear words, bungled an attempt to quote scripture, and got a ringing introduction from the university's president and son of its founder, Jerry Falwell.
My father was criticized in the early 1980s for supporting Ronald Reagan over Jimmy Carter because Ronald Reagan was a Hollywood actor who had been divorced and remarried, and Jimmy Carter was a Southern Baptist Sunday school teacher. My father proudly replied that Jesus pointed out that we are all sinners, every one of us. And while Jesus never told us who to vote for, he gave us all common sense to choose the best leaders and the ability to choose the best leaders. Dad explained that when he walked into the voting booth, he wasn't electing a Sunday school teacher or a pastor. After all, Jimmy Carter was a great Sunday school teacher, but look what happened to our nation with him in the presidency. Sorry.
Wow. Oh, this is so beautiful. Get those teleprompters out of here. We're going to have some fun, right? Get those teleprompters. It's an honor to be here, and especially on Martin Luther King Day. We broke the record. You know, we had the record for about 3 or 4 years the last time. And the first thing I said to Jerry and Becky when I got here, did we break the record? They said, yes, you did, by quite a bit. So we'll dedicate that to Martin Luther King, a great man. And that's a little bit of an achievement, I will tell you. One of the people I'm running against, I won't use names because we don't want to insult anybody. And this is really such nice, religious people. I love it. Such great Christians. I can't say bad. Am I allowed to say bad in this room? No. Okay. We're going to protect Christianity. And I can say that. I don't have to be politically correct. We're going to protect it. You know? And I asked Jerry and I asked some of the folks, because I hear this is a major theme right here, but 2 Corinthians 3:17, that's the whole ballgame. Where the Spirit of the Lord, right? Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And here there is Liberty College, but Liberty University, but it is so true.
Well, so anyway, that happened. So, the New York Times article, I'm going to talk about something here in a second. With Trump, evangelicals are judging not. Actually, Trump is getting stronger among evangelicals in polls over the last several weeks. They're noticing. And it brings up a point. Did Donald Trump go to Southern Baptist churches for 4 years like me? I mean, 4 days a week, growing up, like, no, probably not. Or you also want to call it 2 Corinthians. This is what I found, and I've talked a little bit about this before. I had, majority of people that voted for me among well, there are those people. I mean, the people at Trump rallies, but also the evangelicals. I get 62% in the Democratic district because of that. And it's very interesting. When I spoke in churches, I'd always say, don't vote for me because I'm the best Christian running. I'm not. I'm the worst. I said, but I understand you. I share your values. I share your worldview. And I will fight for you. You know, I said, vote for me, not because you think I'm a good Christian. Vote for me because you believe what I believe and I believe what you believe. And I heard the same thing time and time and time and time again. People coming up to me, just like somebody said in this article, Willie, it's like, you know what? God can worry about his personal life. I want somebody that's going to fight for my values and defend my values. So no, he doesn't know what Second Corinthians, but what they do hear is Donald Trump saying Christianity's under attack by the PC police. I'm going to fight for him. A man of strength, if not one of faith.
With Trump, evangelicals.
Judging not. A man of strength, if not one of faith. They know that Donald Trump, a guy that will go around talking about Merry Christmas and blah, 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 blah. They know that Trump's going to fight for him. And guess what? Evangelicals are very astute voters.
And the numbers show it. He's leading with evangelicals. He's not a guy that I think most of us or most people who watch would consider an evangelical himself. He says he has a great relationship with God, but not an evangelical. But he knows how to push those buttons. If you watch that speech, which had a lot of cringeworthy moments yesterday, he talked about the Merry Christmas thing. And that's when he got big applause. And again, that's a defense of Christianity. I'm going to help you pull back what's been happening the last 2 years. You feel like the country's slipping away. Your values are slipping away. I'm going to help you pull them back in.
Well, that's kind of how I was reading the situation. And that was the conversation we had yesterday, right? We talked about whether in a election with a lot of Christians in the population, whether they would pull the lever for a person who seemed to be a better leader than another individual who claimed to be a Christian. In this case, in this particular example, Cruz versus Trump. Anyway, we'll take a break. 752 AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here, 523-1450 and 805-6180 for your text line. I will get to those texts. Okay, so I've got these texts here. From yesterday, God can give grace to a secular president to lead us out of trouble, e.g. King Cyrus in the Bible. All right, and here's another one. It is often the case that evangelical Christians think of themselves as superior to those who simply say they are Christians without all the chest thumping and speaking in tongues. Such evangelicals act as elites, which to me is not N-O-T capitalized what Jesus had in mind. Oops, my name is Mary Kay. BATF, not FBI and DOJ, Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco. But who, I think it was the Department of Justice who gave the thumbs up to Fast and Furious. Is New Mexico basically a sanctuary state? We bow to the needs of the illegal immigrants, but we as U.S. citizens can't access our military bases. What's wrong with this picture? A lot is wrong with this picture. I appreciate it when you discuss religion, et cetera, in a historical perspective. It's very educational. The first time I heard you on the radio, that was the topic, and I thought, who's this guy? I'm glad you're on the air again. Okay, so I got a quick thanks for the text. I got a quick soundbite from Trump that is pretty entertaining.
Trump said 41. I'd take 41 or 42 if we had three people, right? We'll take it then too. And you know, it's funny, all of these guys, they always say the pundits. Believe me, they're not smart people. You take those glasses away from George Will, and he's a stupid looking guy, okay? No, it's true. Okay. I mean, Karl Rove, this guy, He predicted, he still thinks Romney won the election. Remember the evening? No, Romney won. He won. I'm telling you, he won. They had to take him off the air in a basket. I mean, this guy, and he's everything. I had a poll that was so incredible. I was killing everybody. Like a month ago, he's on television saying, well, it can change. It doesn't mean that much. It can change. He couldn't even hold his breath. He's like a boiler waiting to explode. The hatred. The hatred. And what it is establishment. Because I'm not taking anybody's money. I don't want their money. They don't control me. I'm doing.
All right. We do have a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? We're almost out of time, by the way.
Yeah, this is Alan. If I caught your sound bite, did Donald say that he'd take 42 if there were two people in the race? Did I catch that right?
Three.
He said two or three, I thought he said.
I think it wouldn't make any sense if it was two, but your point.
Exactly.
Your
my
point
is just.
Your point is that Trump is an idiot. Anything else, Alan?
I didn't say that.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. All right, folks. Don't be afraid to shout your point out there, Alan. We enjoy your calls, even if you don't like Trump. This is not a Trump show, by the way. But I believe as much as you dislike Trump, he said three, if there was only three. But be careful. What's the old saying? Straining at a knot. Pardon me for that. Blog Talk Radio. Go to Blog Talk Radio. You can listen live to this puppy, or you can listen. You can get a download of it if you.